Welcome to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and this week we're going to talk about Worlds. It's going to be our last in our series of Worlds coverage. We're going to be joined this week by Dark Naj, by overall champion Derek Shoemaker, and by the one and only legend of the joust, John Bruno. If you have any questions for the show, feel free to email us at summeriscomingpodcast@gmail.com. Starting next week, we'll be back to a regular weekly series, and it's going to be a reset. It's going to be season two. It's a whole new world out there with a new meta. Let's start by talking to Dark Naj and about his world experience. So what'd you think, Dark Naj? Was it worth going to Worlds?
Since I was probably one of the people flying the furthest, other than the other Canadian and, of course, the French and Spanish champion, I'd have to say, completely. It was the best thrown experience I've had to date, and I've gone to some of the major events around, like Gen Con twice, four regionals. This was by far the best.
So any fears and worries that, you know, though the initial hype of the event wasn't quite what everyone wanted, FFG overcame and they knocked it out of the park?
Absolutely. Great location. The prize support was great. Everyone got a bunch of free swag just for showing up. The rounds were done well. The refereeing was done well. FFG really put together a great, great tournament. And it's even going to be better next year from what we're hearing. They took the players' feedback very seriously. They realized that some people wanted to play multiple events. They're going to change it up a little bit. It's going to be 4 days now. It's going to be an epic, epic time. Definitely think everyone needs to make it out next year.
Yeah, that does sound amazing, and I can assure you, I will be there. So, I heard that everyone who pre-registered got a Star Wars game. Were you excited about that?
You know, I wasn't super excited about it until I got home and I took a look at it. The game looks great, and not only do we all got it, we got it way ahead of everyone else. So, you can't even buy this game right now, and I think that's pretty cool. You know, the fact that we're seeing something probably a couple months before the rest of the community, and we all get to play with it, it's nice.
Were you a little bit tempted to go on eBay and get, say, $300 for it?
I have seen some people posting on eBay for $300 or $400, and they do seem to be selling. So, yeah, I am a little tempted, but I think I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, I have to admit that had I got it, I would be really excited. And when I heard that, I'd probably think, that's a way to pay for my plane ticket. I think I better do that and then buy it in a month.
Yeah, I was close to that, but I'm not going to. I'm going to keep my copy, I think.
All right, so let's talk about, first of all, the pre-tournament side events you were running. Was there a big turnout for them?
We had 8 players. A couple people that actually weren't going to play in the Thrones main events. They came for other games. Talked to a Polish champion for Warhammer, and he had just finished his national, which had 700 people in it, and he had come down for the 30-person Worlds event here at FFG, so that was really interesting.
That is interesting. I was watching the live stream of the Warhammer, just waiting for something else, and all the people in the live stream were Polish. It was really interesting to see, like, the German versus the American, and all the commentators were Polish.
Yep. They have a huge meta in Poland. It just dwarfs probably any other FFG's games in Poland, and he was really excited to be playing for the Worlds title. So that was interesting, and we all left pretty early. One of the newer players actually won the playmat. Everyone was playing fun, crazy decks. Someone actually played the same dragon deck I took to Gen Con. I played a wacky Martell combo-ish deck. And, yeah, we went out. We had a late dinner, drank some beer, and then we played some crazy melee games.
So let's talk briefly about Melee. What did you end up taking to Melee?
One of my friends told me that it would be impossible to win a table with Lannister power behind the throne. And I took that as a personal challenge. So I actually took a Lannister power behind the throne melee deck to Worlds. It's extremely fast, but it definitely makes you a punching bag for the table. In fact, on my last table I played before the cut, not a single challenge from any of my opponents was directed at anyone but me.
That's pretty funny. So I take it You did not make the cut.
I did make the cut.
You did? Wow, that's really impressive. Despite everyone teaming up on you, you still managed to make it.
Well, I have to put it into context. I was at the final... my final table before the cut was with Mr. Duck, who ended up winning the overall championship. And we got a taste of the now infamous DC combo, where all of our icons were completely removed. Luckily, I say luckily, I had predicted somewhat the combo because of some information that had been spewing around from chat groups and stuff.
So let's just be clear. Dennis has kind of a big mouth. Is that what you're saying?
No, actually, Dennis kept it very, very quiet, at least for me. But some other people showed indications of what I think it was, because it's not a new combo. The thing is, this combo's been around for a long time. Someone played a very similar deck at Gen Con. Of course, he wasn't with a bunch of metamates, so it wasn't obvious. And so we put in a couple things in our deck that would give us not a shot at winning, because you can't really win when you hit the combo, but would give you a shot at pushing some power. And one of the things I used was the event that goes into Shadows, and then when it comes out, you choose a player, and the player, as their next player action, gets to initiate an entry challenge. What this basically allowed me to do is, since it's my player action, the combo relies on multiple actions going off. So someone uses a Scourge, that's their action. Then the other person untaps their Scourge, and they have to wait till their action window to use it again. But in the meantime, if I'm the next player, then my next player action, I'm allowed to initiate my entry challenge, and I have all these guys with renown. I'll do a big entry challenge, and I claim like 9 power or something.
Wow. Just to be clear, what is the combo again? It's the Scourge and what else?
It's Hellheart Engineer. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but it's basically a character that allows you to untap a land as a response to an opponent kneeling a land. So basically someone would kneel the Scourge, and then someone else would kneel their Scourge, and then the first player that had knelt it already would use the Engineer to unkneel his Scourge, and then when he used it, the other player could do the same thing. They could do that back and forth and basically just take everyone's icons.
So basically an infinite combo between two players from the same meta. It's either ingenious or collusion on its very face.
I think it's both. The deck was extremely strong all alone. They did not need to have two players from their meta sitting at a table to win. The deck was just good. Great deck. I did see some horrible negative play experiences. Round one, I saw this girl sit down at a table. The first thing she said was, "I'm new to the game. I live here. I came to play Melee because I didn't want to play Joust because it's so competitive. You know, Melee's more of a laid-back vibe." Round one, two DC guys sit down. They trade their search plots with each other. They put the combo in play, and they zero out all her icons. She doesn't get to initiate a single challenge. She doesn't get to play a single card, basically. And she got up, left, and didn't come back.
Yep, I can understand that.
This was a player that, you know, she didn't even own all the cards. She was saying, "Oh, I really wish I had Shadow Bob, but I don't own those packs."
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's the one downside of having such a strong melee combination like that. I mean, that's how I felt at Gen Con. I'm not a new player, but I still was in two games like that where it just, you know, I couldn't really do anything. It's just so frustrating. And if I was new to the game and I came because this was the, quote, less competitive area, then I really would be turned off.
Yeah, so that was too bad. I mean, I can't fault them for it. They made a great deck. It plays better with the more of them at a table. Good for them, you know. It was a little abused. I think they shouldn't have planned ahead to do that combo, because I did at some points hear people say, "Let's do the combo." So they were well aware of it. You know, they were prepared for that, which right. was probably part of the part where you just start saying, "Okay, is this collusion?" You know, it's hard to decide. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, though. It is an ingenious deck idea, and the way I see Melee, just the way it works, is the goal is to, you know, screw people over. And if you have a deck that by its very nature is able to do that, that's a good deck.
Right. They didn't do anything super crazy like use, you know, the standing draw free where you pay a gold to claim a power and instant win. But they were close enough.
All right. Well, let's move on to Joust. How did you fare on the Joust?
I made the cut again.
Wait. So you made the cut in both events. How are you not the overall champion?
You're a funny man.
Well, by my calculations, you got 7th overall. So I'd say that's pretty darn good.
I'm happy with my 7th. I wish it was higher because the last game I played in Joust, I played it first. I'll tell you a little bit about the deck. I played a Baratheon deck, basically Baratheon Rush Maesters, that used both of the locations that stand characters to be able to multi-use my chains every single phase.
And what are those locations again?
So that's Macy's Hook, where you can stand a character with stealth, and of course one of the Baratheon Maesters has stealth. And then King Robert's Hammer, where if it's not summer or winter, you can stand Baratheon characters.
And did you have a way to remove seasons in your deck, other than the Tin Link, Copper Link combo?
So I didn't actually play with the Tin Link Copper Link combo at all. I just ran 3 Carrion Birds, and I actually ran the Raven Song, because what I found in testing was if I got the combo going, I basically got to draw 6 cards and get, I don't know, 20 gold. So even one round with the combo functioning put me in such a lead to most other decks that I didn't need anything else.
Gotcha.
So I played with the Raven Song so that if I got locked into a season and I couldn't use a Carrion Bird to get rid of it, I could play that and do the combo.
What is the text of the Raven Song again?
Basically says seasonal effects aren't, it doesn't count as a season. So it's no longer winter, it's no longer summer, it's just nothing.
Gotcha. And it's just for the turn.
And it's just for until that plot's gone. Which is nice because you actually get it that round and the beginning of the plot phase, which means you can draw cap both on the round you're in and the preceding round.
So in how many games did you get this combo going where you were pretty much able to infinitely stand this Maester?
All of them but one.
Ah, that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And how many did you lose while you were able to get that combo going?
I lost my final to Eric. I lost a match because of the most horrible play I ever did in Game of Thrones. And I lost another match to a Superior Maester deck.
Oh, what was the Maester deck?
It was Martell Maesters, but it was the Super Control version where they multi-stand the Scourge to blank icons using the Tin Link.
Steel Link?
Yes, the Steel Link.
Excellent. Yeah, it seems to me that the Martell Maester rush right now is just not very viable because there's so much Maester hate. There's so many ways to handle it. So I think the Control version is probably the best version right now.
It's extremely solid. I only had one round of the combo before my Maester got Civist. And then basically after that, I couldn't win a challenge, so I couldn't get my chains going again.
Okay, well, why don't you take us through briefly your first couple rounds? Did anything stand out?
Well, first round, I got a bye. Second round, I played... You know what? I can't even remember, really. It was very generic. Actually, that's not true. I played a Sol Kal meta made of yours, I think, Tiny.
Ooh.
It was the Targ Jumper deck. It was very similar, I think, or maybe the same deck that Bruno took to win it all. He had never seen my deck before, and once I had the combo off, there was very little he could do. I think the turning point was I played my Calm Before the Storm at the same time that he played his Threat from the North, so that he couldn't play events and kill any of my guys at a key time.
Yeah, that's a really strong play right there.
So he was a really great opponent, really good player.
Yeah,
but,
that's Ryan, and he's a really good guy, too. He's just a fun guy. It was really good to see him do as well as he did. Backing up real quick, you said you got a bye in the first round. Does this mean there were an uneven number of people, and so you got kind of screwed by getting a bye?
No, I got a super bye. I got a bye for winning one of the regional events. So all the regional winners got a bye with perfect strength schedule.
Yeah, and that bye ended up being pretty key, didn't it? Because out of the 4 and 2s, the only people that made it through were the ones with a super bye.
Yeah, absolutely. That bye was the only reason I made it through the cut. So after playing Ryan, I played a Lannister Shadow Agenda deck. And I took an extremely early lead. I became extremely overconfident. And I played well that first phase, that first plot phase. Second plot phase came around, and I guess I just decided to check my brain at the door because I did the absolute worst play I had ever done. So my opponent attempted to Val. I outwitted. Great. Stopped the Val. We continued to play. He sent a challenge through after kneeling a Carrion Bird, hoping that my Knight of the Flowers would defend. I said, no way, I know this guy's got, you know, I'm with small, he's going to give deadly, he's going to kill my knight. I've got 2 paper shields, but I don't want to burn them at this point. So I let it go through, later on. He does an int challenge. And I'm looking at my chains and I'm saying, I'm one chain short of doing infinite gold. Well, not infinite gold, but ridiculous amounts of gold. I already got my draw engine going. You know what? I'm going to block this. He'll probably have it small. I'll paper shield it. No problem. So sure enough, he comes in. I'm with small. I say, I win. He says, yep. I say, great. He says, your character dies. I said, okay. And I put my character in the dead pile.
Wow.
That's right. Check the brain at the door. I immediately said to myself, but I wanted to cancel that. But I'm not the type of player that says, oops, I meant to cancel that.
Right. And I think in Worlds, that person would have said, well, that's cute that you meant to cancel that, but that ship has sailed.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So, so I went on to lose that match.
And did you block with the guy with all the chains on him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I blocked with my maester with all the chains.
Even better.
Oh, yeah, it was perfect. It was just absolutely perfect. And it was my only maester on the table.
We can call that officially the mistake of the week.
Oh, it was incredibly bad. I actually felt sick to my stomach after doing it. And it took me that whole entire match to be able to put my brain back into a place where I could continue to play.
I'm happy you were able to. It's a good learning experience for people that absolutely terrible things are going to happen to you during matches. And what really separates the good players from the not as good players is that mental fortitude to be able to just kind of put it aside and say, all right, I'll dwell on that later when I'm kicking myself. But for now, I have, three more matches to play just before the top 16. I have to get it together now or my day ends.
Yep, absolutely. So I went on and played the Martello player that I already told you about. Lost again. So now I need to win my next two games to even have a shot at getting in. Now I'm lucky because I found out that every single person I've played has not lost other than to me.
Wow, that's really shocking to have that happen as early as the second round.
So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I might have a shot here if I win my next two games. You know, I got that first round bye that's really strong, and if all these guys are going on to 5-1 or 4-1, I might be all right. So I'm playing my next game, and I win. I play another Targaryen deck, very similar again to John Bruno's, minus some of the super tech this time, because it wasn't a Soul Cal deck, so it didn't have Confessions in it. It didn't have Waste Their Time, but it was a very solid Targaryen deck. Then I played a Lannister Winter, was my final matchup. And I just got a really early lead. I had like 10 guys out. He tried to Valturn too. I outwitted again. And basically at that point the game was over. I think I won by turn 3.
Were people surprised by your outwit? It kind of sounds like they were.
A lot of people didn't call it, and I used it not just for Val, but for other things. Like in my final game with Eric, I really didn't want him to get the seasons going, because then I knew that I'd have a lot of problems with Mira jumping in and out of shadows, double blanking. So I used it actually to outwit his search for his Raven.
Oh, that's a really good play.
That was good. And actually, that's the game I'd really like to talk about if we're going to talk about a game. So I made the cut because of my strength of schedule. All my people went to win all their games. I think one of the Targaryens had a 3-2, and all the rest had a minimum 4-2, but most of them had 5-1. So that was really good for me.
And what seed did you end up getting?
I ended up getting 16. Well, actually, I don't know what seed I ended up getting. I think it was actually the 14th seed, but I ended up getting 16th overall. And that's basically because the people that were below me went on past the cut.
Right. So they basically had pretty big upsets. So you're saying the 16 and the 15 seed won in the first round?
I believe so.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I played Eric, and I know that he had a loss, and there was an undefeated person.
I believe Zap Brannigan was undefeated.
Yeah, so he was definitely playing the 16th seed, so that couldn't have been me. And I think John Bruno played the 15th seed, but I'm not sure. So against Eric, if people that don't know, Eric he's in the DC meta. A lot of people call him the head of the DC meta. He's an extremely good player, several titles, lots of regional wins. I think he's the only player to have won 3 regionals in the same year. And he's got a couple cards.
Look up the Blackfish, and then you'll see who he is.
Then you know his face, yeah. I've played Eric at a few other major tournaments, and I really took this as our grudge match, because the first Gen Con, he had beat me. This Gen Con this year. I beat him so that he didn't make the cut to go into top 16. And I said that to him. I said, I think this is our grudge match. And it was literally the closest game I have ever played in a Game of Thrones. I got to 15 power, but I had a chain on my agenda.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. It hurt even more when he much and mored, and I saw that my next two cards were Maesters, and then they got shuffled back into my deck.
Oh. So, question for you. How many Maesters did you play in this deck?
I ran two Pylos, two Lumis, one Crescent, two Conclaves, and three of the little weenie Maesters.
Okay, so how many total is that?
It's nine.
Nine. Okay. And you thought nine was enough in a Maester heavy, in a Targ heavy environment, or did you not think Targ was actually going to be that prevalent?
I thought we were going to see Targ, and we were going to see Starkwinter a lot, and that's what I saw. I played a lot of Starkwinter. Well, I saw a lot of Starkwinter, and I saw a lot of Targ. So.
Okay, but in your testing, you had found nine to be the sweet spot?
Yeah, in our testing, we actually found that versus Starkwinter, we could hold off their military challenges enough that they couldn't get their kill events going. We played with paper shields. We could stop a few of them, and because of that, that was enough Maesters.
Okay.
The game with Eric... started off really good for me. He opened with first snow, played three guys. I played nine guys, so my board was just monstrous. I won all three challenges. I got my draw going. I drawed, so I had...
Wait, back up for a second. Did you say you played nine guys on the first turn?
Yeah.
And, wow, okay.
Yeah, so the deck really spews forth people. I had one card left in hand at the end of the first turn, so...
And so you, of course, thought he would Valor and played out Wit, right?
No, I didn't think he would Val because I didn't think he would blow it on that round. I actually expected him to try to control my Maesters at that point. I didn't feel like he was in a unrecoverable position after round one. He got a two, you know, he got a claim through on me, he beat me up a little... I had played Calm Before the Storm, so he wasn't able to kill any of my Maesters. Hmm. And the very next round, he spewed forth a ton of characters.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And on this round, he actually had a bigger board presence than me for military icons. I had Lumis duped, and he had... Nightmared and Mira Reed during his marshalling phase to drop all the chains off Lumis.
Yikes.
So I no longer had my draw engine going. I looked at the board presence. I asked him how many cards he had. He had two. I had four. I said, all right, this is time for an offensive Val by me. I used Lumis to knock off the Renown, off three of my Renown characters, and dropped a Val, saving those three characters could not be killed. Saved Lumis with his dupe. And I figured I was in a good position. Eric's reflooded the board, came at me with a claim two. I took a hit, decided to take the Knight of Flowers to claim, wanting to make sure I had a Maester on board. I still had that one chain on my agenda. I killed one of my little Maesters and still had Lumis. He, of course, had no quarter. I had no paper shield. And that was the end of the Maesters.
And how did he reflood the board? Did he have cards in shadows, or did he have Ari out? And
No, he drew in two characters, and he had characters in hand, basically. Those full cards were, you know, three characters and no quarter, probably, and I think he drew a few more, so.
Gotcha.
I was still in a good position because he had taken his only Lord character's claim, which, to me, was the only mistake I saw Eric make all game. I had the Stannis out that says only Lord, your opponent can only block if you have Lord characters. And I dropped a little Maester down. And, of course, next turn, just so I couldn't get that chain off, he dropped a Val and blew up my board. Great move by him. I think 85% of the players, because he actually had better board position at this point. I played King's Law so they could go first and just snatch the win. And I think 85% of players don't see the win there. You know, they don't think he's going to grab a whole bunch of power and win this. And they don't drop Val, but Eric's a really good player, and of course he did. He saw it. At that point, it was just a struggle back and forth, me never getting a Maester. The final round, I ran in, I hit 15 power, just couldn't draw a Maester. So by the end of the game, I think I had somewhere between 15 to 10 cards left in my deck, three of which were Maesters. And Eric then much and mored me twice, both times discarding Maesters down into my deck, and that turn I didn't draw any. That basically what it came down to.
That's an interesting play on Eric's part. Knowing that you need Maesters, why would you play much and more there, thinning your deck so that you have a higher likelihood of drawing Maesters?
Yeah, at that point I actually finally had Paper Shields in hand too. So I actually considered much and more in, Paper Shielding much and more, and I thought, no, I want my deck as thin as possible. Even if he's not choosing Maesters, it just gives me a better chance to draw them.
Yeah, had you drawn a Maester then, that would have probably been the, you know, the other way, the biggest mistake that Eric had ever made. But luckily for him, it didn't work out that way.
I felt like the game was really good the whole time, very close. And I just keep looking back going, oh, please let it be that I did not forget to remove my chain at some point during that match. And I saw Eric afterwards and I asked him, I said, did I ever forget to remove a chain? And he said, no, I wish you did, because then I could bother you about it now.
Well, that's good. It is always demoralizing when you're playing a Maester deck and you forgot to remove just the one, and that happens. And it's happened to me in the past, I can admit it.
Yeah, so, you know, with Eric saying that, I felt pretty good. And, you know, Eric went on to take second in the Joust, placed amazing in the Melee, really, really good player. I don't feel bad losing to someone of that high quality.
Yep, definitely. That's more of a function of only having the 14 seed. When you get the 14 seed, then you know you're probably going to be matching the first round against Bruno, Eric, Atkinson, some sort of legend playing an amazing deck.
Yep, and that's what it was. And I'm sure I'm half remembering the plots and what played out wrong. That night was quite the party.
Yeah, that's always how Game of Thrones works. After the Joust, after the Melee, people are a bit hesitant to get too crazy because the Joust is the next day. But once the Joust happens, everything goes crazy.
Oh yeah, it was really crazy. Like, at one point, the five people I was with ordered a pitcher of every beer on tap.
Wow.
And the waitress told us she couldn't do that because it was illegal. So we had to pretend more people were coming.
That's pretty funny. So yeah. What did you do for preparation for the event?
Oh, I played the deck 200 times, mostly with French Horn Mikey. He's my playtest partner, and we played just about every single deck for a month, every night, one or two games every night for a month.
And how did that work? Did you just tell him to play whatever you wanted him to play, and he only helped you test, or was this a bipartisan kind of project?
It was totally bipartisan. So we would do one night I would play Bera, the next night he would play Bera, I would play Bera the night after that, so forth. We go back and forth. You know, we took a week, we said, okay, we're going to test versus Stark this week.
That's a really good plan.
We're going to test Targ, and we did Targ. And we did, each week we did that. We did, you know, the top two or three builds we thought out of that house each time.
That's a difficult plan to enact because it really means that you have to have your stuff together long before the event and have a deck in mind that this is what I'm going to play, and stick to it. People have such a hard time of finding a deck they like. They play test it a bunch. They find one bad matchup, and they say, oh, no, I need a new deck. And by the time they get to Worlds, they haven't tested any one deck thoroughly enough.
Yep, so we played the Baratheon deck basically exclusively after I dumped my Martell deck. The Martell deck was just too Jamie, so I had to go with something a little more shaggy.
To Jamie, that's not even possible.
It is, though. So we went with the more shaggy. The deck was a very solid deck. Like, it's not a bad deck. It rushes extremely fast. It can flood the board. It's got good draw. It's got a couple weaknesses, but overall. And we went through 70 iterations of that deck during our playtesting.
Wow.
So I actually have 70 different saves of that deck.
Had you seen Jim's build? I don't know if you were aware of it, but that was the first place I saw it. Jim was running that for a little while, a couple months ago, and I saw that. And
yeah,
I was
so around around our 35th build, Chris Jank pointed out to me that Jim had a similar build, and I wanted to get my hands on it to take a look. So I ended up getting a copy of that. Well, Mike actually ended up getting a copy of that from Jim. And it was similar. There was probably half the cards were probably about the same. We really focused more on things like that would do multiple standing effects. We used Shadows Bob. We used Knight of the Flowers because we were running the land to give +3 strength to all the standing characters.
Ah, was that an anti-Targ maneuver?
It was, and it worked out very, very well. So we would easily get our guys up, you know, +6 strength, and they're not kneeling, and the Targaryen just couldn't burn them out.
Yeah, that's a really good anti-Targ card if you can have non-kneeling characters. I know I built a Lannister deck like that with Littlefinger and Cersei trying to capitalize on that.
But even with characters that do kneel, because we had all these lands that stand them, if we were first player and we got first action, we could actually stand the character back up before the Targ player got an action window to do any burn.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So did you run a lot of high initiative plots to try to ensure that would be the case?
Well, we had the plot that removes shadow cards and has a 9 initiative, so that was our big plot where we wanted to, if we needed to push through a bunch of challenges and we were worried about burn, that's the plot we would go to. In that, though, a lot of our plots were around 3 or 4 initiative, which you're not going to win versus a Targ Knight of the Hollow Hill deck.
Yep, that's a good point. So overall, what's your general feeling of Worlds? I know you already said you loved it. Anything else you'd like to close with?
I think the people were great. I think, I'd like to do a shout out to Morgan and Kyle and some of the guys and girls that we hung out with a large part of the time. It was great, you know, bumping into people like Greg Atkinson, like Bruno, like all these great players. You know, I talked to Will from Two Champs and a Chump, a really nice guy. We saw Daryl there. And it's always great to just, there's so many people I could just say names the whole episode, but it's so great to go out with these people, play really, really focused competitive Thrones, you know, one day and that same night. Everyone's walking around talking, drinking beer.
Yeah, I think that's what really makes the community special is that it is highly competitive. It's not like it's not a competitive environment, and somehow, different metas even are able to just hang out after the event and just put all a competitiveness aside and just have a great time.
I got to spend a lot of time with the French national champion. Because I was one of the few people that could speak French at the event, which was really interesting because he was there during the now infamous disqualification, and his perspective on the whole thing was very different than a lot of other people. So it was interesting to hear.
I think we should have him on the show then, and you can interview him in French, and then everyone can just pretend like they know what you guys are talking about.
We kind of tried that with Team Covenant, but he chose that to try to do the interview in English, though afterwards he expressed that he wasn't able to say everything he really wanted to say.
Ah, very good.
But he is an amazing player, and I guess in the French meta there's a real sense of pride in one's house. Like, he played Targaryen at this event, and only Targaryen. And they actually give prizes to people who go the farthest with each house in events, and their sense of honor in the French meta seems to be really paramount. It's very important not to seem like a kingmaker, not to seem like someone that's trying to help metamates or someone else. And you could see him doing things specifically because he thought it was more honorable to do it that way than another.
That's very interesting that having that approach, he was still able to make the final table. It seems like that approach would hold you back a bit in Melee, just because Melee is sort of, in its nature, a bit dishonorable.
Absolutely. You saw, I guess, I didn't actually see the final game of Melee, but I think Dennis tried to make a deal with him, and his response was, "I don't deal with kingmakers." And that was because of things that had happened to him and others in the tournament up to that point. He kind of grouped a group of people together and said, "These people are kind of playing in a dishonorable way, and because of that, I will not deal with them, period." Even if it would have given him the game, he wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, I have a feeling it would not have given him the game that, you know. I mean, just the way I would play Melee, I would make a deal with him. And if it's the final table, I'm breaking deals. I mean, once it's the final table, I don't care if I'm labeled as a deal breaker. I'm making deals and breaking them if it helps me win.
Oh, absolutely. I never got to a, actually it's true, I've gone to a final melee and some big events, but I never had the opportunity to break some good deals. So
yeah, I think that would be fun. But, well, Dark Nash, thank you so much for giving us your rundown on Worlds, and we really appreciate it. Our first guest today is Derek, who I know better as Sir Duck from the boards and from the AGAT Skype group, but he is our current Worlds overall champion. So congratulations, Derek, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks for having me.
All right, so my first question for you is, when did you realize you were the overall champ?
I actually had no idea I was, because we were Mikey and Darknage and I were talking during our first round bye in Joust, and we were talking about the fact that since the French champion had won Melee, and really there wasn't anybody else left at the final table because of the DQs, that he probably had the best shot by far to win the overall, because I guess Mikey won Melee at Gen Con and scored like 40 points, and Darknage was fourth at the final table and only scored like 20, so they were saying like the Melee champion had a much more points than everybody else. I didn't really know that much about it. So going into the tournament, I knew I was in the top 8 of Melee because I finished second in my cut channel, or cut table. Once I made the cut in Joust, I knew that the French champion also made the cut, so I had assumed that no matter what, he was going to win it from that point on. I won my first top 16 match, but then lost my second. After the top 4 games had already started, Nate French came over to me and basically said, hey, you're going to want to stick around for a little bit because we've determined that the 4 players that are left in Joust are unable to catch you. You're going to be the overall champ.
Wow. And how'd that feel? Were you surprised?
I was extremely surprised. I was happy about it. I mean, I thought that was pretty awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I was watching it on the stream, and I can't remember when they showed it, but just all of a sudden they cut to, and here's our overall champ. And I suddenly realized, wow, I don't have a clue as to who this is possibly going to be. And when your name popped up there, I was so excited for you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody else was pretty excited that I know. Even the DC guys all congratulated me, and I know Eric was one of the first people that, you know, said congratulations and something to the effect of, you crazy PA guys always win stuff.
Mm. And I saw that you won quite a nifty Warhammer.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. The look on my face, and probably my wife's face as well, when they brought it out and handed it to me was special. I think my wife's first comment once I was done with the presentation and walked away is, how are we going to get that home on the airplane? And one of the FFG guys was there, and he's like, don't worry about it. There's a box. We'll ship it to you. So that's how it's getting home to me. But during the Joust finals, I was able to carry around and play with it. It's pretty awesome.
That's pretty funny. So the next question about the Warhammer is your marriage really strong enough to support having a Warhammer in the house?
In the house, yes. The debate now is where and if I'm allowed to mount it.
Interesting. Okay. All right, so I'd like to ask you a couple questions about your preparation. So I'm not sure how many people know you that well, so why don't you describe the, quote, meta that you're in?
All right, the meta that I'm in basically consists twofold. One is my best friend since fifth grade, Jaren, and the other is my wife, Rachel. We played since the CCG days. When the game transferred to LCG, we all got out of it for a little bit. But last year, probably October or so, we all got back into it. We went to Black Friday last year, regionals, a couple other tournaments at DC and New York throughout the year. I play my wife probably 15 to 20 games a week on average. Jaren normally comes over about every other weekend or every 3 weeks. We play 3-player Melee a lot, get some Joust games in. I obviously am a hardcore Stark player, so That's pretty much all I play. Luckily for me, Jaren is very diverse, plays a lot of different things. My wife plays Martell and some Baratheon, a little bit of Lannister, so I get at least an idea of what everybody else plays. That's my main group, is just the three of us right now. But I also, as you know, get a large amount of games in with the Octagon and Skype group.
Yeah, how much would you say that's helped you, since it seems like you have such a small meta? And the reason I said meta in quotes is because I knew it was really just you and your wife that played a ton together. So has Octagon really helped you get a broader understanding of what the overall meta is going to look like?
Not necessarily Octagon by itself. It's more the Skype group. Because sometimes, like, I do want to have a game where I can just get on, play whatever deck, and have fun. And I can do that if I just log on to Octagon and host up a game or something. But I don't know what the quality of opponent I'm going to get. And obviously, sometimes I get somebody who's good. But a lot of the times, I get somebody who, as soon as something goes wrong, you know, for one reason or another, they decide they'd rather play a different game or play somebody else. So it doesn't give me a good test. It's the Skype group that Dennis, I believe, or Staten, I forget which, got me into originally, that if I want good games, I can just ask in there, hey, somebody want to play a game? And if somebody's around, I normally can get a decent game in. A lot of the players in there are more than willing to critique my decks for me if I have questions about a couple cards, or if, you know, I really have a hard time beating a certain thing, I can, you know, I talk to the people in the Skype group about what cards I can put in there to counter certain cards that are giving me problems.
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of consider the Skype group almost a meta of its own. We're all so friendly and close to each other. Like, even someone like Dennis, who is clearly cemented into the DC meta, still participates heavily in the Skype group and is willing to help out and receive help, and it's a really collegial atmosphere.
Yeah, I know it's a tournament. When the top 16 were posted in Joust, Dennis was saying, well, there's seven guys from the D.C. Wisconsin group, and one, and he's like, yeah, I think there's at least three others from the Skype group, so I know that he considers us, you know, at least partially involved with himself.
So why don't you talk a little bit about the deck that you played? First of all, what house and agenda was it?
Melee or Joust?
Let's primarily focus on Joust.
Okay. Joust, I played Stark Knights of the Realm. It was very similar to the deck that I won the DC tournament with. There were a couple changes I made at the last minute, so to speak, because I was really worried about Knights of the Hollow Hill, including Targ and Martell. The changes I made at the last minute basically were, I cut one copy of Brienne for Varys, because there wasn't a whole lot else I could cut for a three-cost character that wasn't a knight or a warcrest. So that was a hard decision. I cut out one Knight of the Red Fork for a Price of War to give me more help against Targ. I added two Knights of Harrenhal to replace my two former champions, just to get my gold cost down a little bit, and also they turned out to be huge in a couple games because they protected certain cards that I needed in my hand and I could just get rid of other stuff that it wasn't as good at that time. And the big change that I made, which I jokingly refer to as my secret tech, was I took out the two Frozen Outposts to put in two Borderland Keeps. And honestly, throughout the day, the Borderland Keeps were amazing cards.
Why don't you tell us what the Borderland Keeps do, since they're a little bit of a not often played card.
The Borderland Keeps are a one-cost location. I can discard them from play to cancel a triggered effect during a military challenge. For example, I believe three times throughout the day, I was able to kill a Maester Aemon that somebody knelt as Claim Soak and didn't know what my location did, so I was able to discard it to cancel that response. And at one point, I used Lewin to defend during a military challenge, because my opponent had a Maester of War out giving him a military icon and was able to trigger his response. It was my opponent played he calls it Thinking to cancel it, and I was able to discard the Borderland Keeps, or one Borderland Keep to cancel the He Calls It Thinking, and I did draw into a kill event with Lewin and was able to play it on that challenge, and that turned the game for me.
Were you mostly playing that as a means of ensuring that you got your kill events off?
No, actually, the one card that tore me up the most in all of my playtesting was Red Vengeance, because of the fact that I run a lot of two-clan plots, and I need to win those military challenges. So even if I know my opponent has one, I still have to push through military challenges, and that does, you know, without running Valor, I need that two-claim to keep the board control.
So was that the primary reason you put it in, was to combat that card?
Yes, but at the same time, my wife actually is a huge fan of cancels, and that made me realize some of the value of being able to cancel things, plus the fact it's a one-drop for setup, so it really helps my setups, as opposed to putting like a paper shield or a hand's judgment in there to be able to cancel stuff. The other thing is it did help me cancel saves more than push my events through.
Ah, yeah, I can understand
that. But that's an also added bonus, is being able to push my events through if they become canceled.
Right, because it just seems like such a narrow card that you can only use it during military challenges, so it's not a very flexible cancel. So if they just do a Hatchling's Feast against you or something, you can't cancel. It's really only able to be used in that narrow scenario.
Correct, but at the same time, if I extend on the military challenge, they're not able to use the Hatchling Feast to lower my strength and make my challenge blockable. They have to use the Hatchling's Feast before I declare the attackers, which takes away the element of surprise. I know in the one game that I played, a Martell player was holding two Game Ups of Asses in his hand. I eventually intrigued them out with the two-claim intrigue, but he wanted to be able to use them during the military challenge after I had already committed characters, but couldn't.
Yeah, it sounds like that card is amazing against people that don't really know what it does and that, you know, aren't able to kind of plan properly. But it just seems like against a top-flight player that they would be able to play around it. But I definitely see what you're saying. It would really be good against saves and just make sure that those kill events can go through and kill anyone you need.
Yes.
What about your preparation for the event? Did you do anything special to get ready?
Not really. Like I said, I'd just been playing a lot. Honestly, I had taken a break from playing the Stark Knights deck for a long time. I had mainly been focusing on Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill deck that I had built and at one point thought I might run because it had been giving my Stark deck so much trouble. And that really helped me because I was able to learn what that deck was able to do by playing it a lot. I played it against my wife a lot when she played her different decks, and that really showed me where its limitations were. I wish I would have practiced a little bit more against some of the Targaryen jumper decks that I thought might be big. I did practice against Targ Burn a lot, and I honestly had success against Targ Burn in my playtesting because of Narrow Escape.
Yeah, Narrow Escape is pretty brutal against Targ Burn. That's one of the reasons why Bruno put Confession in his deck, was specifically to try to target Narrow Escape, to limit the potential for that. So, what did you end up playing for Melee then?
I played Stark Siege of Winterfell. Dark Nodge had suggested it to me a while ago. My previous Melee deck was a Stark Kings of Summer, just for the additional draw. But with the restriction of Make an Example and Superior Claim, not being able to play both of them, I felt it wasn't fast enough. So I switched over to the Siege of Winterfell with Epic Events, primarily focusing on Syrio and the Northern Cavalry Flank to carry through the challenges for me.
Were you able to win any of those games pretty much on one turn with all the Epic Events?
Actually, my first game I was able to win on turn one. I played four Epic Events, and through a deal I made with a Martell player, because I won the coin flip and got initiative, I was able to make a deal, let him go first because he really wanted the gold, and he agreed not to use Myrcella to take my title. I was able to grab the military Lord Commander of the Kingsguard title. I was able to redirect a military challenge to me at one point to win it, and I won a military challenge on defense. So I believe I won seven military challenges in the first round, all told, although I was unable to trigger my agenda for one of them because my wife defended with Brienne.
Brienne! All right, well, that sounds like quite an interesting performance. I know Stark Siege can be really fast in melee.
It can. That was really the only game that it was that fast for me. Most of the other, I mean, all of my games that I played on the day were over by the end of round two. So I can't say that any of my games were slow. And I finished well in most of my games. But it's a fine line, because whenever you get in certain matchups, there's certain things that you just don't do well enough to combat some of the other houses. And also, if you don't draw the epic battles, then only making one military challenge round with a total possible power grab of, you know, 2-3 if it's unopposed, just isn't as fast as some of the other decks. Now, I was using Make an Example as my restricted card to claim extra power during military challenges, and almost every time I grabbed the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard title, but unfortunately in most of my games, Myrcella took it from me.
Yeah, she's a real pain. So last question for you about melee is, did you end up at a table with two or more DC guys at all?
Yes, I assume you're just lumping them all into the DC. Yeah. I ended up at a table with Rick, one of the finalists, and Chad, who's from Wisconsin, I believe. But he was playing the same deck.
How'd that go? Were they able to use their combos to keep you down, or were you guys able to fight through?
No. The first round, they both had the pieces in play to keep both myself and Dark Knowledge without icons for the entire game.
Was that fun?
Not entirely, no.
Yeah, I gotta say, I think it's pretty ingenious to design a deck that just has such amazing synergy. If you're going to bring so many people to an event, it pretty much assures that you're going to be able to work together at some point.
I definitely agree with the ingenuity of it. I agree that it's a great deck, and I definitely agree that it can win on its own. I know there were a couple people that were playing the deck or something similar to it without the one card that made it, you know, over the top when you got with somebody else, and they still did okay. So,
what was the one card you're referring to?
Hellholt Engineer.
Right. And can you tell our listeners what he does?
I believe after an opponent kneels a location, he has a response that you trigger to stand one of your own locations.
Yep, that sounds right. So I think it's probably safe to assume that the Hall of Heroes will come knocking at your house. So are you excited to join the illustrious ranks of the members that are already in there?
To be honest, I've heard Dennis and Mikey talk a little bit about the Hall of Heroes, but I have no idea what it is.
Okay. Well, then maybe you'll be surprised. I don't want to ruin the surprise for you.
I did see, like, I've seen some of the guys had cards, like, hanging from their name badge that I think said Hall of Heroes on them or something similar to that effect, but I know there's a lot of great players, and, you know, just to be considered in the same breath of those people, I think in anything that anybody does who is as competitive as I am, that's basically your goal. You realize that in a card game as well as in any other kind of event, there's a lot of luck that goes into the results. But at the same time, as long as you're somebody who can play with the big boys, it's cool to be considered that level.
Well said. Would you like to spoil for our audience at all any ideas you have for cards that you're hoping to get made?
I know that once I get in depth on building stuff, that there's a lot of non-disclosure agreements and all that stuff, but since I haven't been contacted with any of that stuff yet, obviously everybody who knows me thinks that I'll definitely make a Stark card. I kind of want to make a Stark card, but part of me doesn't want to, because the way I look at it, it's going to be viewed one of two things. Either A, it's going to be completely broken, or B, it's going to be not as good as Mirror Reed. So, I have given some thought to other stuff. I'd like to try to, I mean, part of me wants to try to make a decent Stalwart card, just because the keyword isn't that great right now. Something just to put it in line with, you know, the Ambushes and the Vengefuls and the Vigilants. But it's a fine line, and, you know, I definitely want to play something that you know, bring something to the game and will actually be played and not just get in a chapter pack and then be stored away in everybody's boxes.
Yeah, I think that's the most that anyone can hope for. You want to put a card out that's going to be played. Maybe not broken, but played.
I agree. And something like the Knights of the Hollow Hill Agenda, First Snow of Winter, Ghost of High Heart, what was the other one I was thinking of? Blackfish are all examples of really good cards, but never really thought of as broken cards.
Yep, fair enough. So what did you think overall of the first World Championship at FFG headquarters? Would you consider it to be a successful event?
I would consider it a successful event, but I have never been to even Gen Con before. I had, like I said, I started playing again competitively last year and only been to a couple regionals, some local events. I say local, but D.C. is about 4 hours away, so is New York City about 4 hours away from where we are. But the weather was great, actually, for Minnesota in November. That's one thing originally that worried me, that the weather could be potentially disastrous. But it wasn't, so I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the fact that a lot of good players were there. I know at one point when we were playing, I think it was whenever I got cut to top eight before the pairings were announced, I realized there was something like four former world champions in the field at that point. Playing against people like that's pretty awesome. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I play the game competitively, is to have a chance to play players like that. It's one of the reasons why I like going to DC, because that generally means I get a chance to play Eric or, you know, somebody like Rick, who are really good players, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Well, Derek, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have the overall world champion grace us with his presence. I wish you continued luck, and I hope to see you next year at Worlds, because whatever it takes, I'm going to be there.
Well, hopefully fate will allow that to happen, but I don't think it will, because as I think you are aware, my wife and I are expecting our daughter, our first child, in January, so that'll probably occupy most of my time in the coming year.
Oh, no. I have a 3-year-old. Children are easy. They take no time.
Yeah, but the thing is, my wife also plays.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us, and good luck in your future events.
Thanks for having me, Tiny.
Well, that wraps up part one of our World's Interview series. Stay tuned for part two, in which we talk to John Bruno. Until next time, stay classy, Westeros.